Hey, Slinger's the first official Wordslinger podcast from the road, and we are going to be talking to Casey Barrett, so stick around for that interview coming up next. Hey, sometimes it's hard to know where to start when you're building and growing your indie author career, and that's why I have put together something just for you. Me and my partner, Roland Denzel, have created Indie Author Blueprint. So hop over to indieauthorblueprint.com, start learning about all the ways you can build and grow your own indie author career, and we'll be right there with you all the way. See you there, indieauthorblueprint.com.
It's the Wordslinger Podcast, where story matters. Build your brand, write your book, redefine who you are. It's all about the story here. What's yours? Now, here's the guy who invented pants optional, Kevin Tomlinson, the Wordslinger.
Wordslinger.
Well, I am Kevin Tomlinson, the Wordslinger, and I'm a Wordslinger from the road right now. We are, Kara and I have finally pulled the ripcord. We've exited normal, everyday, hanging around a house life, and we're out on the road in our tiny little camper, a little 19-foot travel trailer. So we're going to try this out for a while. If you listened in on the Author on the Road episode last time, number 212, that was broke down some of what we're going to be doing here, and it's been interesting. One of the challenges is internet, so I still haven't worked all that out yet. We got a few options, nothing's perfect. I've already had some glitches, some very frustrating times. Just not sure what we're going to do yet, but working on it. So if you have suggestions, by the way, let me know. I have tried, I've got multiple LTE hotspots. I've got boosters. I've got all kinds of stuff. And so far, so far, modest luck, we'll say. Well, today we're talking to author Casey Barrett. Now, he is a crime novelist. He's also a Canadian Olympian and the co-founder and co-CEO of Imagine Swimming, which is New York's largest learn-to-swim school, which I think I actually read this exact bio in the interview. But I just thought this was really interesting, and this was a great interview. It's been on tap for a while now, and thanks to all the pandemics and movings and relocatings and all the stuff that's been going on, I am only just now getting to it. There's gonna be a lot of these, so without further ado, let's jump into this interview with Casey Barrett. I think you're gonna enjoy it. Stick around and see what happens on the other side. See you there. Hey everybody, thank you for tuning in to another Wordslinger interview, and today we're talking to Casey Barrett. There's a lot I could say. You've got an interesting bio, man. You've got Canadian, Canadian. That isn't the important part of the sentence. You've got Olympian connections. It may be important to you, actually. The Canadian part may be more important than the Olympic part, for all I know.
Equally important.
Equally important. To our Canadian listeners, it's very important. So, how are you, Casey? I'm glad to have you on the show.
Good. Thanks for having me today.
So you, I do want to kind of talk about, you know, your background in history. You do a lot of swim related stuff, actually, and that was your kind of role in the Olympics, right?
Yeah, I was in the 96 Olympics for the Canadian team, and swimming has kind of been, for better or worse, my identity in one way or another my whole life. My company, when I'm not writing, is called Imagine Swimming. It's a swim school in New York City.
Yeah. And that's pretty interesting on its own, by the way, because that's the last thing anybody thinks of when they think of New York City is swim schools.
Yeah, and it's I guess that was a benefit for us that there wasn't I'm not gonna say there wasn't competition, but it was an underserved market. My buddy and I, Lars, launched it in 2002. Mm-hmm. So we're all over 17 years old, which is really surreal. Some of the first kids we ever taught are now in college. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we're feeling the years.
And the protagonist of your series is
is a swimmer or was a swimmer.
Yeah, he's I describe him as a kind of a son of a Madoff. He's a fallen rich kid with a father who was Bernie Madoff-esque, who was very rich and very crooked and ripped off a lot of people. And my protagonist, Duck, fell far from, I'd say, from the Upper East to the Lower East, the Upper East Side to the Lower East Side, when he was in high school, and that kind of put all his Olympic dreams or presumptions on hold. And any kid, that happens to any kid, that you're going to go sideways. And he went sideways and ended up doing time for dealing weed, which I find very ironic now that it's more or less a legal substance. But not so long ago, it wasn't. And a lot of people went to jail for that, which is absurd. But
But that makes for an interesting kind of surreal twist that you could bring into the books. Have you played around with that at all? Like the irony of going to jail for something that now, the dealing part's still not legal, but
yeah. I mean, and well, that's my third book. Like I said before, you started recording, I just got the hardcovers in the mail.
Yes,
comes out August 27th. But my protagonist, Duck, is he doesn't admit it to himself, but is a heavy drinker, full alcoholic in the first two books, and the third book finds him admitting that he needs to take a break, at the very least, from the bottle. So he's on, quote, the weed cure. And he recognizes the irony that he's a convicted felon for dealing weed, and now it's kind of the thing that saved him. He's clean, so to speak, but he just smokes weed, and it's a little bit funny. I can name half a dozen friends, some very close friends, who are on, quote, the weed cure, for whatever reason hit the bottle a little too hard, and now are clean in all ways and have great cleaned up lives, but are committed pot smokers.
Wow.
So I'm not myself. I smoke a little bit, but not. I wouldn't say I'm on the weed cure or anything like that. But I find it just really, really fascinating, particularly this day and age when it's steadily becoming more and more legalized and more socially acceptable. That a substance that not so long ago was sending a lot of people to prison, and now it's saving a lot of people from much, much worse addictions.
Yeah.
Which I'm obviously fascinated by.
It is kind of interesting to watch as people sort of fall all over themselves, sort of, what is your opinion on this? What is your practice on this? Should it be legal? Should it remain illegal? And then, as states start to say, basically open the doors a little, it's interesting to watch people kind of fall all over themselves about it.
it is. I mean, I kind of have a libertarian streak over that stuff, but at the same time, I'm a father. I have an 8-year-old daughter, and I look at things, I think, a little more realistically as a parent. Where, I'm not saying legalize everything and throw caution to the wind. I mean, I think it's something that should be regulated.
Regulated, right? I'm on board with that.
But it's a lot healthier than cigarettes or bourbon. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, yeah, but don't take my bourbon. Your protagonist, aside from being a former swimmer and a rich kid and a felon, and he's a very rich character, by the way, and I mean that as layered. He has an interesting job. You want to talk a little about I want to hear the origins of your decision for what he does for a living.
love to chat about it. Well, he in terms of career, I guess it's a very loose word. He's an unlicensed private investigator, although he bristles at the word private eye. In the first book, he refers to private eyes as being passé, which is kind of just my own private dig at the genre I'm writing in.
Right, because, right.
Admittedly, he has a lot of the tropes of the genre, which I like. I mean, I love reading Private Eye books, and I like the, you know, the loner, hard drinking, and these are cliches, and you know, rather than pretend they're not there, I have some fun addressing them head on, and hopefully tweaking them a little bit. But he, because he's a convicted felon, he can't be licensed. So he's an unlicensed finder, he calls himself, rather than a private investigator. But because of his unique background, once being a rich kid and falling far, he's in a little bit of a privileged place in terms of the kind of clients that seek him out. I think it's an accurate representation of this kind of unique breed of Manhattan rich people who will only trust their own in a certain respect, but also feel comfortable that Duck, the protagonist, was once a part of their class and is no longer. So there's a sense of being able to look down on him a little bit, but also there's a sense of being able to trust him with their dark, dirty secrets because he was once, you know, part of that privileged class. And these are folks that would be horrified to go to the police. These aren't people that would go official channels. Just before we started talking, I think a million New Yorkers, or maybe all over the country, I'm obsessed with this Jeffrey Epstein case.
Yeah,
which it feels like the ultimate Law and Order SVU. And he's just such an unbelievably horrifying character, but he's, you know, it's, you know, maybe you have to live in Manhattan to believe that these people exist. So shameless and get away with it for so long,
right?
He's so evil. It's. I mean, I'm so far down the rabbit hole reading everything I possibly can on this this scumbag that it's.
See, that's research, though, man.
I guess,
characters. I'm constantly shocked at, like, I cannot invent characters who can compete with some of the real world people floating around out there. Like, you think that there's no possible way that this could be a real human being.
Yeah.
It has to be somebody who's made up. And then, you know, there they are, tracing through a courtroom or something.
Well, the New Yorker had this column that came out today. I mean, everyone's weighing in on this guy, but they mentioned that his like broad strokes of his bio, just in terms of who he's hung out with, President Trump, President Clinton, Prince Andrew, blah, 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 and the fact that he owns a private island in the Caribbean, like, all this stuff it wouldn't even get past like scripts in a scripted crime drama. Like, it's just too perfect and too over the top. It defies all belief, but yet this is really this guy's life. And this is post conviction. He's been a registered sex offender for 12 years and he's
I have literally had people criticize characters I created as unrealistic who didn't have half of this guy's like qualities.
Yeah.
You know? So it's intriguing. I mean,
he's doing a favor to all fiction writers. Any time that anyone lays that on us, that it was unbelievable character, we can all point to Jeffrey Epstein and say, oh no, they're real.
These are real people. They really exist. Yeah. That's like my wife and I were watching an episode of 2020 and there's this actor who murdered his neighbor, who was like an ex special forces guy, murdered him, and then murdered the girl that he had a kind of relationship with in order to cover it up, to make it look like he'd killed the girl and run.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is straight out of a thriller novel. Like, this cheesy, and the guy was such a cheesy actor. Like, while they were questioning him, he was being dramatic and
he's in the role.
Yeah, he's in the role. It's like, wow, people like this actually exist. So is that part of, I mean, I know this guy's not, but, you know, how did you research your character? And, you know, I know part of this, because he's a swimmer, so you've got that perspective. Are you a rich kid too? Did you?
No. I mean, I think a big part of it was related to my my day job, so to speak, running in the swimming school, where I've you know, seen up close and personal the ways of these kind of families in New York City. And I mean, by and large, there, you know, I'm not going to criticize our client base that and makes our business, but you know, they're good people, but you do see some really, really twisted ones. And in fact, the Madoff children were clients. They sent their kids. So Bernie Madoff's grandkids spent with us for a little while. And
oh, wow. Okay.
It couldn't be more tragic what happened to both his boys. I mean, one of them committed suicide. It's just, it's so, so horrible. But it really, I don't mean to keep going back to Madoffs because I think my character is...
Well, they're fascinating.
Yeah, it's somewhat separate from that, but it was a huge inspiration. And it was like the Jeffrey Epstein case, the Madoff case completely obsessed me, and I couldn't stop reading about it years ago. And it really informed the character. And just being a New Yorker for over 20 years is, you know, I hope that the city itself is a character, because it's such a part of Duck's identity. Well,
It has, unlike any other city I've been to, New York definitely has that energy. Like you know, and there's a reason why, like, every other film says New York is a character in this film, you know. It does play that part, like, in a unique way that you can't get from, you know, Boise or or Houston or whatever.
Some kind of living beast underneath this island of Manhattan that I don't know what it is, but
Now we're talking epic fantasy story now. It's a modern day fantasy story. There's a living creature in New York City. Hey, man. All right. Okay. I haven't written fantasy in years, but maybe dust that off. So, okay. You're up to three books now. You just got the hardcover. You want to show everybody the hardcover?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hold it up.
Yesterday. It comes out August.
Look at that.
There it is.
Oh, I talked over it. Hold on. Let me be silent and you hold up and say something about it. And people
all right. Comes out August 27th, The Tower of Songs, the third book in the Duck Darley series. This one focuses on the super talls, these so-called super talls that are currently scarring the skyline of Manhattan. They're termed super talls because they're over 1,000 feet and basically the world's biggest money laundering scheme, hiding in most obnoxious plain sight possible. They sit empty. Almost all of them are empty, and all of them are bought with anonymous LLCs. And I just think it's one of the most remarkable things in New York today, because it's corruption so hiding in plain sight. So the book itself starts, the prologue is the guy who lives at the very, very top. So no one's ever lived higher. No one's ever lived in a home higher that looks down on quite literally everything. The guy who lives at the very top is abducted. He's taken out of his apartment at the very top floor and drugged and taken out the front door in a wheelchair with a hood over his head. And that sets the mystery in motion.
All right, that's a fair start. That is interesting, by the way. I've heard of the super talls, and I've heard of, you know, I've watched some things about the corruption involved. It's really interesting because there's so much happening behind the scenes there that we're just never going to know.
Yeah. You know? And you never, well, actually, this, I was, I'm sort of like reaching for books all over the place.
As authors do.
This book, Wonderland, I was reading on my flight 2 days ago. I don't read a ton of nonfiction, but this one, the subhead is Why Thieves and Crooks Now Rule the World and How to Take It Back. But it's essentially gives you the whole history of, quote, offshore money and how post-World War II it was created in a very, very small group of bankers in London who created this term offshore that set world finances free. And that really has enabled things like these super talls to go up, because you just layer anonymous LLC over all different countries. And generally they're small sovereign states of like Nevis in the Caribbean, Jersey off the coast of England, Gibraltar. There's a whole bunch of them, and really just tiny little so-called countries that accept doing this this business in order to stay stay solvent. It's the only way they can they create an industry for themselves, and the the industry is a very good one because you facilitate billionaires' secret deals. And the point is that you know, money can travel freely all over the world. There's no borders, but laws, there are borders, and it's in that dichotomy that allows the dirty money in the world, which people estimate conservatively is 10% of all the money in the world is black market dirty money. I think it's probably higher than that, but it's still astonishing. You're talking trillions of dollars, and it moves through the world and is able to be laundered cleanly through this scheme, because it's impossible to prosecute. You can't even track down who actually owns what. And I kind of look to these super tall buildings in Midtown on Billionaires Row as kind of the ultimate end game of this reality. That what happens when you need to clean hundreds of millions of dollars? Well, you create a thousand foot buildings and you keep them empty so people can pay cash and make sure that asset is secure. When everything else goes to hell, you'll have that asset.
It's really interesting. It's kind of, if you think about it, it's sort of it's like a precursor to Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very much so.
It's really intriguing. And in fact, I mean, I have this paranoia about cryptocurrency that I never could be comfortable enough to invest in it. Right.
Yeah.
And that's probably a good thing now. but you know, this whole idea of what money actually is now, you know, it's no longer a physical thing. Money is this abstract. And when it became an abstract, it became very easy to manipulate.
Yes.
So that's very cool. So so you've, it's, there's all kinds of things that are feeding into your book here. So what's the kind of general story? What, like, how does Duck get involved in all this?
The thread, the inspiration wasn't just outrage looking at these buildings. kind of the seed or the hook, if you will, of the story.
Oh, what's the...
It came about because I was reading, and it's amazing to me how these stories kind of stopped, even despite these crazy protests in Hong Kong. These stories have kind of trickled out of the at least the American media of these kidnappings in mainland China, where Chinese or Hong Kong booksellers were getting abducted because they were selling things that the party didn't like, and they would just these guys would just vanish for an untold amount of time. And then when they came back, they would say nothing about what happened. They'd stop selling the offensive books. And, these are booksellers who ultimately aren't all that powerful in the scheme of things, but it does happen with some regularity in mainland China, where one of the richest men in China, who was famed, he was like a billionaire in his 20s. He was this super genius guy who was tasked with investing the riches of party members.
Yeah.
And he was taken out in the exact same way I describe in my book. He was taken out of his private residence in the Hong Kong Four Seasons, drugged, taken out the front door of the hotel and in a wheelchair and not seen again. Wow. It was in the New York Times, I think 2 years ago, February, something like that, maybe even 3 years ago. And if you search it, and I've searched it quite a bit, you can find very, very little on it. And this it is remarkable, but maybe it shouldn't be so remarkable, particularly when we're talking about Jeffrey Epstein and the the way that the very rich get away with things, and you can't find stuff about it. And that, to me, was really the seed of the story, combining these the super talls and placing a guy who was a hedge fund billionaire at the very, very top, and was an investor to even more powerful people. And he was taken out his front door. And when that happens, you don't go to the FBI, you don't go to the NYPD. You probably shouldn't go to an unlicensed private investigator either. But the guy's 17-year-old daughter, she would, the family was told, do not say anything and he'll be back soon. the mother and the family accepts that. The daughter can't because she's a willful 17-year-old. And she seeks out my protagonist, Duck. She knows of him because a kid at her school, which is the plot of my second book, he helped save him, helped save a kid. So she knows of him in kind of a vague way. And she kind of recklessly seeks him out for lack of anyone else to seek out, and convinces him by doing what a rich girl will do and offers him a dumb amount of money for what seems like a very small amount of work. And and Duck's take is, okay, I can ask around and make a few bucks and I won't get anywhere. But you know, these things don't work out.
Yeah. The heart of every good hard-boiled detective novel, easy money.
Yeah.
That's cool, man. I mean, it's fascinating. I'm definitely picking this up because I have to know what happened. I have to know how this turned out.
So. Yeah, it was a lot of fun to write. I know there's like and they're both perfectly fine ways to go about it. But I know there's kind of a division between outliners or seat of the pantsers in terms of writing our genre, and I'm definitely a seat of the pantser. And for the only reason that I want to see what happens myself. I think I would find it boring to outline because I already know what happened.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, you got to be your own first reader in my mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I love being surprised myself and then going down a completely wrong direction. And it makes the rewrites a lot harder and a lot more time consuming. But I guess it's just where you want to take on the baggage of the real work. You can front load it and make an outline, and then your draft will probably be in pretty good shape. Or you can back load it, the way I do, and write a really terrible first draft and end up having to rewrite like crazy.
Yeah, yeah, that's so
that way to me anyway.
So you did pants this novel too?
Yeah, always. I mean, I just maybe if I shift to you know, if I were to do like historical novels or something like that. An outline would probably be necessary, but writing in the present tense and writing in the first person, I don't see how I could outline it. It would stop being fun.
I mean, I've been a pantser my whole career. I can't, I've tried outlining, the books always fail when I do that, which is not to, I always hate kind of downing on outlining, because there are just some folks who just cannot write unless they've got that outline.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think those people are amazing. Because I don't understand. Our brains work differently.
Yeah. I'm sure you're a fan of Dennis Lehane.
Yes.
But he had this quote where he's been a Sea of the Panther with every one of his books except is it Shelter Island, the one on the mental asylum that
the one that, yeah. Wasn't that like Leonardo DiCaprio.
DiCaprio started. So he said he's done Seat of the Pants on every one of his books except that one, because that one required an outline.
Yeah.
And he said he absolutely hated writing it. He hates the book. He said he's happy that it's successful. Obviously, you're not going to turn down Martin Scorsese to make a book make a movie. But he said that, like, of all his work, he absolutely hates that one because he had such a miserable time writing it. An outline.
Yeah.
Maybe we all be so lucky to write a successful book like that and hate it. But
I know. But what a black eye.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I hate outlining, but that one book made me.
It happened to sell millions of copies and to a blog. But I did. I find that really funny because you know, you everybody has like their own kind of personal relationship with their books. Like they become you know, in a cheesy way, family to you. So it's funny to look at a guy who's basically cheating all.
I've been finding lately is that so my plots are becoming more complex, right, as I go on and write more thrillers. And what I've started doing is writing the whole book and then looping back and adding the complexity parts. So I know how it's going to end now. So basically I'm outlining. I'm just outlining in
long. But it's a first draft, even though I guess the two aren't really so different. It's kind of a it's a distinction that doesn't even need to be made, because ultimately a first draft is an outline, whether you call it that or not.
Right.
My second book, Against Nature, and I really am proud of the way I ended up fixing it and the way it ended. But the first draft, I went on a 15,000 word tangent that I guess I had to do to figure out the right way. But when I went back and I gave it a break, and after I finished first draft, I tried to give it a couple weeks anyway before going back with fresh eyes. And the first draft was about 120,000 words. And I literally just had to like delete the final 15,000 words, which was right. really, really painful, because you know, you sweat over that. And it's the third act to me anyway is always the hardest.
Yeah.
And to go through it and realize that I got it totally wrong.
You have to trim fat. Like, I want the fat.
Yeah.
And the fat was the fun part.
I'm fine with trimming fat here and there, but going through and saying, fuck, the last 50 pages are terrible. I mean, basically it'll start, you know, at 100,000 words or so, which is still a relatively long book. And then having to find a new way. It's
makes good bonus material. You can polish that up, put it on your website, bonus chapters or,
No, it was, I was researching like,
that bad.
Like why and like how to melt a body and how like the bones would disintegrate and all this stuff was for naught. Maybe it'll come back at some point.
It will. That stuff. And none of that's easy, by the way. The melting a body, I've had to look into this.
Like, it's really not an easy thing to get rid of a body.
It is not, man. To eliminate a body without a trace, almost impossible. I applaud. Yeah, you and I probably have very similar search histories that have us on very similar watch lists.
You're worry about that with that search history.
I do. You know, I occasionally follow Google searches with. I'll do a search for phrases like, "Hi guys, I'm an author. Please don't come after me. I'm just looking something up." You know, just in case. You know, like if they go hunting through my search history. To at least find a little note from me.
Here's a recent one you'll like, and it's come in handy. But speaking of getting rid of bodies in the most efficient way, look into pet crematoriums.
Yeah.
Go to a shady vet, because pets need to be cremated too.
Right.
And you can bribe a shady vet to use the crematorium when the vet's closed.
Right. Yeah, I used that exact scenario in a novella I wrote early on, and I've been thinking about bringing it back for later. But yeah, you're right. There are other ways to. Well, no, we're not going to get into a how-to on how to dispose of a body.
Theoretically.
Well, I thought about body farms. Okay, like if you can somehow gain access to a body farm. Then, you know, basically you could put this thing out there in plain sight, you know? There's a whole lot of, but those are well protected, I've discovered, and to the point of being in secret locations. So,
really?
Not always, but yes, there's some around me. There's a couple in my general area that I've been trying to track down.
Cause that's going to be a Google search for later that'll.
Yeah.
Put us on even more watch lists.
Well, I went on Google Earth, Google Maps, and used satellite view to try to find one.
Did you find it?
I think I've found it. I think I have found it, and that's so. It's research, right? So we'll see what comes of that. They're very protective of those for good reason, because they don't want people using them as dumping grounds for bodies. That's exactly what that's about.
It makes very good sense. Probably want to keep those locations quiet.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, we're at time. I've really enjoyed talking to you, man. I love talking to fellow thriller authors.
Yeah, me too.
I probably lean more towards thriller authors on this show than I should, but it's my show. I get to do what I want. Yeah. Tell everybody. Well, okay. First, when did you? The book's coming out in September.
It's on the back it says September, but it's weird quirk of publishing where it's the Tuesday before.
Yeah.
So it's the release date is August 27th, which is the last Tuesday in August.
Okay.
I don't know why they do that, but.
I think I used to know why they did that, but it does. I don't think the reason makes any sense anymore.
Well, let me know, because I've never got a good answer. It comes out in September, but not really. It comes out at the end of August.
Yeah. I think it's really kind of a shipping thing to make sure it's in all the storefronts by its release date. I don't remember. But anyway, I'm sure somebody listening knows. I got a lot of people who were in the traditional world who know. All right. Well, where can people find you and find the book and find everything else about you?
Find me at caseybarrettbooks.com. And I'm on Instagram with regularity. I technically have a Facebook and Twitter page, but I never, ever use it. I'm almost useless for social media aside from Instagram.
Yeah.
But I am on email and I'm on my site plenty and on Instagram all the time.
Excellent. All right, man. Well, I appreciate you stopping in.
Thank you so much.
You Here's got it.
Out of a Tower of Songs.
Tower of Songs. With a brilliant yellow cover.
Thank you. I like it.
Can't wait to see it. All right, everybody. If you're still here, I know you are still here. I shouldn't have even said it that way. But right now, you're probably hearing the Groovy Bridge music. You may dance and place it well. Stick around. We're going to have a little bit of something after the I'm sure there's an ad rolling up. So I'll see you all on the other side.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Casey Barrett and took something useful away from it. now we're at the end of the show. I got so many sad things to say. No, nothing sad to say. I hope that you are, I want you to continue to tune in, by the way. We've got a lot going on. There's going to be a lot going on in the near future. For me, for this show, for Draft to Digital, it's just a bizarre world now, for me, and a lot is changing, and I'm having to kind of refigure some things out. One of those things is, of course, broadcasting from the road. So, make sure that you are, tuning in, because it's bound to be an adventure. I've already had one, D2D Live just sort of. I kept dropping out of the conversation through the whole thing, so working on resolving that. So anyway, you're going to hear me talk about these things for a while, so get ready. We got more stuff coming up in the near future, though. I got a lot of interviews in the can that did not have the technical glitches that I am bound to have going forward, so you can rest easy. Make sure you're tuning in, by the way, to DDD Live. You go to D2D Live. That's D, letter D, number 2, letter D, live.com. If you go there, you'll be able to see a countdown for the live shows that we're having. We've been doing a DDD Spotlight every day, and we're planning to try to continue doing that through the summer. It's one of those challenges I gotta deal with, so... But it's me, Mark LaFave and Dan Wood, and we've been covering things pretty well, talking to the influencers of the industry. So you'll get some the inside scoop on how things are working. And make sure you're checking out indieauthorblueprint.com. That's me and Roland Denzel, and we're kind of pulling together all the best stuff we can find online. And we're going to be creating some new materials. There's going to be a lot of stuff available on the site. And Roland is working hard on that right now, I think. So, that's the way things are going. My new book, The God Resurrection, the latest Dan Kotler thriller, released a couple of weeks ago and has been doing phenomenal. My book, Coelho Medallion, I put on a special... a free promotion, and it hit number one on the entire Amazon store for free, at least. But entire Amazon store is a big deal, no matter what, no matter how you got there. So big things, and I'm looking for more coming up. Got an announcement about author email coming soon, so stick around. No hints. I'm not going to let you know anything about that, but you're going to want to hear what's happening. It's going to be big news. that is it for this week. And thank you so much for being a part of the Wordslinger podcast, especially as we're getting on the road, going through this little transition. It's a rough world out there right now, with not just with COVID, but with the riots. Racial tensions are high. This is a scary, difficult time to be in. But this sort of thing in our history has usually hailed some sort of big positive change. And there are hopeful things out there. Look at the SpaceX launch. First time a commercially built spacecraft has exited the atmosphere to take human beings to the International Space Station. It's the first time in history that that's happened, and the first time since 2011 that an American-made spacecraft has actually been launched and outside of our atmosphere. So I was thinking about that because there's been satellites and things. Maybe it's a manned spacecraft. So, but that's exciting stuff. That's hopeful stuff, and there's a lot more out there. And I'd like for us to continue focusing on that, rather than the scary things, the negative things that can be happening. Let's do our part in the world to make the world better. That's the best we can do right now. The riots and the protests and that sort of thing, there's a place for protesting. There's zero place for rioting and looting. I don't know. Your opinion may vary. I've seen a varying... I'm shocked at some of the varying opinions on this online, frankly, but my firm stance will always be there's no excuse for violence and theft and the just thuggish behavior of the people who are understandably upset and angry, completely justified in their anger and completely justified in what they're feeling, just not justified in their actions. So that's my stance. Take that for what it is. It's worth practically nothing. So anyway, God bless you. Take care of yourselves out there. If you're in one of these rough areas, stay home, stay indoors. I mean, that's the best advice I can give you right now. And focus on positive things. And I hope this show can be one of those for you. God bless you. Take care. I'll see you all next time.
Wordslinger.